presentation fascinating and interesting. Go for it.
Thank you, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. My role in this talk, as we're wrapping up the conference, is to leave you something of a look at the future, something to take forward with you, something to think about that maybe you hadn't been thinking about before you got here to this conference. And I'm going to start with Alejandro, who spoke yesterday, who said health is personal. Outcomes, health outcomes are personal. And I want to say pretty much the same thing about learning. Learning is personal. And I'm going to talk a lot about that during the half hour or less that we have together. So in the field of education, we've gone through much the same sort of thing as you have in the field of health. We've gone through things like knowledge translation. You've had your Cochrane collaboration. We've had our own Campbell collaboration. The idea is intuitive, building on evidence, building on knowledge, and translating that knowledge into practice. However, in practice, in education, as I would believe in healthcare, it hasn't worked out as well as we would have liked. There are reasonable doubts that we can raise about the idea of designing for the average. There are reasonable doubts that we can raise about the idea of drawing conclusions and deriving best practices from scatter plots like that. Each one of those dots that isn't on a line is an exception. I want to talk about those exceptions because those exceptions really are the rule. Criticisms of this kind of approach is that we have to move beyond this narrow idea of a knowing-doing gap as a way of thinking about learning. We have to move toward situation-specific, practical wisdom, the sort of thing that isn't necessarily captured in textbooks. We have to be thinking about knowledge as shared between practitioners. We have to be thinking about knowledge, partnerships, and communities. But how do we get to this point? How do we reason our way to it? Well, I think of learning as a process of exploring rather than following. An example I often use to talk about learning is discovering a new city. Like me, wandering through San Diego. I haven't been here since 2002. It's always interesting to explore a new place. There are different ways you can learn about a city. You can get on a guided tour and they'll show you around to the highlights. We'll go to SeaWorld and the San Diego Zoo and the USS Midway. We can get on one of those hop-on, hop-off buses. We can get into a taxi cab and have the taxi drive us around. It's very personal, but it's really, really expensive, especially here. Slightly cheaper if you use Uber. You can get on a city bus, effective but slow. Or you can walk around with or without a map, or you can do as I did, take a bicycle. And by contrast, the traditional model of learning, the one we have in schools, and that's kind of like getting out of the plane at the airport, being kidnapped, put into the back of the van, and being driven around the city. Okay, sometimes people laugh. Every one of these ways is unique, and people have their own different ways of touring a city. That's what I did. I'm quite sure it's unique. That hill there, I carried one of the city bikes that you can get from the stands up that hill in order to complete a gap in my route. I'm pretty sure I'm the only person to take that particular tour of San Diego. And it was better for it. And we have models of learning personally like this. We have the hackathon where people come together and work on their own project in their own way, actually hacking code. We have things like the EduCamp, The EduCamp is a bunch of different tables set up. People come with their computers or their equipment set up on a table. People go around from table to table pursuing whatever thing is of interest to them. It's personal learning in the sense that it's guided by the individual in question, according to their own objectives, according to their own needs. I want to make this distinction a little bit more concrete. You see, there's two approaches to learning that we can take. One approach is to begin with the content that people have to learn. The other approach is to begin with the thing that we are trying to do, the idea of practice. And typically, when we go from content, we go to practice. When we go from practice, we learn eventually the content. So, really, on the left-hand side, the one that begins with content, we're defining an ideal state that we want everybody to reach. But on the right-hand side, the one that begins with practice, we're defining a desired state that the individual learner would like to achieve. On the left-hand side, the role of the educator is ultimately to test you, to see if you measure up. But on the right-hand side, the role of the educator is to help you to achieve whatever learning objectives you have, whatever your desired state may be. On the left-hand side, the role of the educator becomes largely one of correction. Your educational experience will be one of mistake correction until you finally achieve that desired content state. On the right-hand side, though, failure is an opportunity. And what you're doing is you're iterating your way to success. And the educator in this model is, again, helping you iterate your way to success. There's different metaphors we can use for these two pictures. One metaphor is to think of the left-hand side of knowledge and learning as though it were a library, and it's all stacked up neatly in books and chapters and sub-chapters, and you just work your way through the text. The other way, though, is much more like the environment of exploring, of discovering, like touring a city, like seeing what's there. Yesterday, or the day before, my objective was to go to the cliffs by the Pacific Ocean. That was the environment, that was my desired state. The bicycle was the support that helped me get there. Was it great support? Not so much. I had to carry it up a hill. We hear a lot about personalized learning. That's the left-hand side. That's the side that begins with content. Personalized learning, adaptive learning, big data-based learning, things like that are all types of learning that are based on defining an ideal state and then correcting you as you achieve your way towards that ideal state. Personal learning is learning you do for yourself. It's based on your desired state, your desired objectives and outcomes. Personal versus personalized. It's probably the key distinction that we need to draw when we talk about learning from this year forward through the next 5, 10, 15 years. You think about it, this distinction comes up quite a bit. Think of the distinction between personalized healthcare, which might be an HMO, filling in the ticks to define a personal plan, versus personal healthcare, where you, as an individual, take charge of your own health. Or as I like to think of the distinction, we can have, on the one hand, chocolatized syrup or chocolate syrup. This ties directly into learning through practice. And that's a real picture in a real window in a mall just over there somewhere. I thought it was great that they preserved the practice state of the drawing. So in healthcare education, you deal with practice a lot more than most disciplines. I'm in philosophy. We're philosophers. Practice, not so much. We go out and get ourselves into ethical situations and try to reason our way out of them. That's about it. I love the expression on that dummy. It's Like he's saying, I have my belly open. It's just wrong. Other disciplines depend a lot on practice. Airline pilots, for example. It's interesting, the more important the outcome of the education, the more likely we're going to make sure that people actually practice something before we put them into a real situation. We want airline pilots to have learned how to handle a crash before they have to handle a crash. Really important. Mobile interactive trainer is something that we developed at the National Research Council. Again, it's to provide practice for law enforcement agencies and military agencies in things like combat or entering a room or things like that. NeuroTouch Simulator is a pretty neat thing. Again, it was also developed by the National Research Council. Those instruments there that the person is using are actual real instruments that you would use in neurosurgery. And I actually practiced that, and I've discovered that I have a natural aptitude for neurosurgery, so I have a backup career. Sim welding, same thing. And again, we're capturing at NRC the heft of the equipment, the resistance of the metal that we're welding, etc. And the word that I learned yesterday for the first time, auscultation. I keep wanting to say auscultation, but that's probably, I don't know, something very different. But auscultation, you guys know what it is. And one of the booths out there had sim stethoscopes with predefined sounds. I thought that was pretty neat. And again, it's the same idea. I used to always talk about a fishing rod, and you would cast your fishing rod, and the thing would go up. And your fishing rod would say to you, you've never fished before, have you? That was a terrible cast. And gradually, by practicing with your fishing rod, and your fishing rod talking to you and working, you know, just coaching you through it, you'd learn to fish. There was a tennis racket that was released about a year ago that does that. And it makes snide comments about your swing. Well, maybe not snide. But the idea of personal learning, immediate feedback, that tracker that I showed you of my bike ride, it's called RunKeeper. It's the same sort of idea. Personal learning through practice, very important. This is so solitary, it's so lonely, and it's so, you have a tennis racket and a dummy with an open belly and a welding, and they're all separate. Our concept, and what I think will be the way learning evolves in the future, is to put all of these experiences into the same network. So you can see there in the center, we've got a thing, you can't really read the writing, but it says LPSS, Learning and Performance Support Systems. And that's the name of the program that I lead in NRC. The idea, and it's not just our idea, is to take all of these individual practice-based and other learning-based activities and link them into a single common repository. But here's what's really important. That repository belongs to you. Does not belong to the educational institution, does not belong to the hospital or to the government or to Microsoft or to Apple or to Facebook. It belongs to you. These are your records. So what we're up to here is combining all of the different experiences that you have over the course of your education. Did you work on the NeuroTouch simulator for a little bit and succeed in neurosurgery, as I did? Then that's recorded. Did you try out the helicopter flight simulator and crash within the first 5 seconds, setting a new record, as I did? That goes into your personal record. This record is yours, and you share those contents that you want to, like the neurosurgery, and not share the contents you don't want to, like the very short helicopter flight. Oh, got an interesting visual effect happening on the screen here in front. So it was mentioned in the introduction that I created the first moot. I was working with my colleague George Siemens, also in Canada. We had a theory called connectivism, which is the idea that learning is the formation of networks of connections between entities, and knowledge is that resulting set of connections between entities. In a human being, it's the set of connections between neurons. In a society, it's the set of connections between people and objects. Humans can learn, societies can learn. So, it's a really hard concept to explain. So we decided what we would do is we'd start a course, an online course, that was an instantiation of the model we were trying to describe. Learning through doing, right? So we did that. We expected maybe 20, 25 learning technology enthusiasts to join us. But what happened was we got 2,200 learning technology enthusiasts to join us, which I think is something like a miracle for a subject that nobody had ever heard of. And our friends Dave Cormier and Brian Alexander looked at our course and they said, that's a massive open online course. And thus, the first MOOC was born. So the idea of the MOOC, the way we taught it, is we did not start with content and march people through a series of content. We started with a series of topics that we would talk about as participants in the course and also the course facilitators. But the idea wasn't to teach the topics. Rather, we were exploring them. We were working through them. We were investigating them. And the people in the course, the participants in the course, would be doing the same thing. So the idea here of the connectivist course is we laid out an environment a lot like a city. We put in a few landmarks of our own, but then we invited people to explore this environment. And so, of course, the way we had to set that up was as a network, as a mesh, as an interconnecting set of roads and trails, and sometimes pretty steep hills. To support that, I wrote an application called Grasshopper, and what Grasshopper would do is get all the inputs that other people had created, bring them in together, organize them, and then send them out in different ways to individual people. It was a way to help people who were off on their own exploring this city to communicate with each other. So one person could say, oh, I found a rabbit hole. Another person could say, oh, I found a bar. Another person could say, oh, I found a really steep hill. And they report these discoveries either through sharing a resource that they found on the internet or by writing an article of their own or whatever. They send it to us. We make sure they're all linked together. The idea here is we're not creating a curriculum, but we're creating an environment. We're building the links, and then other people can explore those interconnections. Learning through practice, learning through doing, learning through immersion into a knowing community. The idea here is you get right into the practice itself, you become part of the dialogue, part of the work, part of the interaction, and through that practice, and through following your own individual objectives and desired outcomes, you learn. So, on this model, creating learning is like creating a network. We're not centralizing. We're not saying you have to study from this institution, you have to study from that curriculum, you must pass this test. These are all landmarks. You can go from one to the other, but you're not required to visit any. There are no passport offices in our learning environment. And so really, if you think about it, what we're doing is we're using, if you will, social networks, broadly construed, not just Facebook and Twitter, in order to create individual personal knowledge networks. So we work in an actual community, and that helps us develop our neural net. Our neural net, the interconnections we form in ourselves, are reflective of the knowledge community, the structure, the knowledge, etc. The big question, and I talk about this for the next 2 hours, but I have 7 minutes and 49 seconds to go, so that's not going to happen. But the question that always comes up, how do you know someone has learned? Surely there's got to be a test. The test is in the practice. The test is in the doing. The test is in the result. How do we know somebody has a particular neural state, a particular knowledge state? We observe them in practice and see if they actually can do whatever it is that they say they are able to do. And it's not just, you know, fill in true, false test results. Again, in the disciplines where it really matters, we get an expert in the field to come in and actually watch them do what they're doing. Because the knowledge state is personal. The knowledge state is not reducible to a set of outcomes or a set of competencies. You can't just tick off the boxes and say, oh yeah, they've completed this list. They are therefore a qualified neurosurgeon. They have to actually be able to do it. And the only way to know that they can do it, the only way that to know that they have the right mindset to do it is to have somebody else who is already a neurosurgeon watching them do it and say, oh yeah, they can do it. On this model, the community as a whole plays that role. The community as a whole sees the person practicing to be an architect, a physicist, a tennis player, whatever, and they can see for themselves whether this person is qualified, whether this person really is the sort of person that they say. Sometimes contrast the other view as X-learning. X-learning is traditional learning. X-learning is learning that is created by TED videos, Coursera, structured courses that you work your way through in order to absorb content. We're more network-based learning. We're more, the idea is to navigate and explore and discover a field rather than being put into a van and driven around it. Leads us to personal learning environments. And that's the thing that we are building at the Learning and Performance Support Systems program at NRC in Canada. A personal learning environment is the technological infrastructure that we want to build in order to support and facilitate the type of learning I've just described. The design is not surprisingly based on personal learning. The design is based on putting the learner at the center of this network. Now, of course, you know, the network is more complicated. It's a mesh network, but from the perspective of the learner, each learner, they are at the center. It's personally focused. These are some models that have been created. The idea has been around for about a decade now. The diagram on the left is the famous Scott Wilson Future VLE diagram, very well known in our community. The other one is by Tim Hand from Australia, similar sort of concept. There are different ways of representing this, but again, learner at the center. So there's the student's perspective. There's the student at the center with the different simulation tools, different content tools, different interactivity tools, and they are at the center interacting in this network. The personal learning record is at the heart of this. That's a heart, pretty cool. This is my medical image. And the idea is to capture all of the data in one individual personal learning record. It's a lot like an electronic healthcare record, but it's for learning. A personal learning record will capture activity data in the form of, say, an XAPI statement. It'll capture artifacts, videos, audio, etc., that a person may have created over time and convert those into learning resources other people can use. It'll capture badges, certificates, credentials, anything that indicates that the community as a whole has recognized a person's learning achievement. LPSS, Learning and Performance Support Systems, is built around this personal learning record. We create a new type of data called the personal graph at the core of this. The personal graph is a representation of the individual knowing state as a network. And then the other aspects of the personal learning environment are built around that. Things where stuff comes in, stuff goes out, where you interact with the rest of the world. Learning activities, where you do things like simulations or crash helicopters. Your own personal library of content, stuff you've created, stuff you've received from other people, stuff you get from your employer or your hospital or whatever. And then analytics and smarts in the tool to help support you. The graph is the core, right? The graph is the idea. The graph is how we take all these individual learning experiences, and rather than try to model them in terms of competencies and outcomes and all of that, we treat each experience as an entity in its own right and link them together. That way we infer and draw conclusions and make recommendations by their association with each other rather than some preconceived idea of what the content ought to look like. We have mechanisms in the background, and I know that's too small to see, but it should indicate some of the complexity of this, where we aggregate information from all aspects of learning, from activity on social networks, to activity in simulations, personal communications, reading, exercises, tests, whatever. Bring that in, interpret it, organize it, create a set of entities, learning entities, that are interlinked with each other to create the personal graph. The idea is that the personal graph, in a way, mirrors your personal knowledge. It's kind of like having an external version of your own knowledge state, and you can refer back and forth to it to support your own personal learning. So that's basically what we're up to. And in my opinion, that's basically where learning and development will go in the future. Away from the institutional, structured, content-based approach and toward an individual, personal learning approach. And so we're going to pursue projects along these lines in the future. That's me. That's my presentation. And I thank you very much for your kind attention.
Thank you, Stephen. I've never seen a speaker who, when it got to minus 10 or 10 seconds to go, was done. Thank you, Stephen. Great presentation. Proud to be a Canadian with you.
And now, as they say, get off the stage.
To put together the program and the various aspects of the research committee and publications committee and the like. But I wanted to take this final moment to thank the people who really did the heavy lifting, during the meeting itself, but also for many of the months that preceded the conference. And these are people who represent the staff in our CPD offices at the University of California at our five campuses. And I just wanted to acknowledge them. They're in the front and some of them are around the room. If you could just please stand from UCSF, Tim Peters, Sean Kirkland, David Lombard. UCLA, Joyce Free, UC Irvine, Steve Beck, and Davis, University of California, Davis, Mary Glenn. So it's been, as over the course of the last few days, many of you have commented on how great the program was, but I would say more of you commented on how great the logistics of the meeting were, and these are the people who made it all happen. Just one announcement, which is, of course, your feedback is extremely important. So for those of you using the app, the instructions that have a value of the meeting are included there. For those of you not using the app, look in your program and the instructions on how to do it online. So please take a moment to do that. And I thought Sachs did a great job this morning of weaving in his reflections into the talk he had prepared. So rather than spending a lot of time verbally right now, I want to spend the next few minutes visually and just take a look at what we've done together over the last 2.5 days.
They have a kind of technology. We
start the slideshow.
And so you tend to see programmers there, people who are careful about the linguistics that are needed for learning, and then they also have ANSI certified standards in a number of areas that take years to develop through very careful process.
Yeah.
And so one of the big things that was talked about there in this unique group of people was that a learning portfolio for someone like a college student who then later goes to medical school, who then later goes to residency school and continues on in life, you don't have, that student doesn't have any kind of portfolio, and it seems like what you're doing here might extend it into that community's concerns of building a portfolio that travels with the student from the end of high school, essentially. Right.
Yeah.
So I just, that occurred to me, and I wanted to ask whether there might be any application to it, or just, I mean, I'm not even in that field, but I know that there's great interest in having clinicians of all kinds carry a personal learning portfolio with them.
Some health organizations, and they say basically this is exactly what we need, because even after they graduate, they continue on as professionals. They have continuing professional development responsibilities,
right.
And now they're in an environment where they're, again, there's no centralized record. If you try to centralize it institutionally, while we commit something,
personally. I mean, even if you don't catch them in college, you could catch them at the beginning of whatever advanced schooling they take.
Start them as soon as possible.
Right.
And that'll vary from individual to individual. That's the way it works.
Right. Well, I know I've been talking to you before. It's a delight to learn who you are.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm just...